Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Empowering Dietitians podcast, where each week I dive into a specific topic to help you feel more confident and connected to your work as a dietitian. This week, I'm going over the concept of dietitian supervision. A lot of my clients have signed on with me because they're drawn to what I say. They know that they want to feel more confident and less stressed, and that they want more alignment between their personal and professional lives. But they don't quite know what to expect from my supervision because supervision isn't all that normalized in our profession. So if you've been listening to this podcast or following me on Instagram and nodding your head emphatically to what I have to say, feeling like, yes, this is so me, if you've felt like I'm speaking directly to you on these episodes, but you still don't fully understand what I do or how I help, this one's for you. Supervision. What exactly does that mean? I'm certainly not a business coach. I'm not even really a career coach. What I do falls in this kind of weird gray area of support that our profession has pretty much been ignoring, and I'm hoping to change that. I call it supervision because it's modeled off of the concept of supervision in other counseling fields. Formal clinical supervision in dietetics isn't really a commonplace thing outside of the CED-RDS specialization for the eating disorder RD credential. My supervision program is not tailored to individuals pursuing that certification, and I also cannot serve as a supervisor for your certified intuitive eating counselor specialization, which I'll talk a little bit more about later on in this episode. I don't supervise you to obtain a specific title or certificate, in other words. My supervision is much broader than that. Now, let's back up and talk about the origins of this supervision concept and what led me to settle on this word, supervision, over something like coaching. In the field of mental health counseling, supervision is an expectation. When I graduate from grad school as a mental health counselor, I will be required to work under a licensed professional counselor for multiple years. That counselor will be my supervisor. They will meet with me for at least 1 hour every week to review my cases and my professional conduct. They will sign off on all of my chart notes. They're basically a dietetic internship preceptor for your staff relief rotation, only it's for 3 years instead of a few weeks. Now, after all of those 3 years of supervised practice, when I become an independently licensed professional counselor, I'm not going to be required to pursue additional supervision, but I will be expected to seek it out should I need it in the future. Regular supervision is still recommended in that particular field, even if it's not required. The idea is that as a counselor, and I don't really care if you're a mental health counselor or a nutrition counselor, basically if you're dealing with fellow humans and helping them solve problems and work on goals, and you're dealing with behavior, you are taking on a lot. And those sessions with your clients or patients, I'm going to be using clients or the term clients in this episode as I often do, but please know that this extends beyond the private practice setting, which we'll also talk a little bit about. Now, in these sessions with our clients, you don't get to process your own emotions. You are there for the client through and through, and you have a responsibility to set your own stuff to the side and be there for them. That is hard, and it's taxing. And this is a big source of moral injury, which is a term that isn't really used as much in the field, but it's basically at the root of what many people are associating with burnout. I really want to create a space in the dietetics field that addresses this and that it's more commonplace to address it. My supervision program is where you can pick up all that stuff and all those emotions that you had to set aside while you were at work, and you can gather them all up and process them in a safe space. You can work through them so that you don't have all that weight and you don't have to feel so drained. I became the space holder for you as you act as a space holder for the communities and individuals that you serve. Now, supervision is not therapy. Let me be clear about that, because sometimes when you're describing it that way, it can kind of sound like it might be. Now, it's not therapy, not only because I'm not qualified to conduct therapy, but even when I am a few years down the road, your supervisor is not meant to be your therapist. Those are two important but very distinct support systems. So there might be some things that come up in supervision that would benefit from further unpacking with a mental health counselor. That can definitely happen. I take my professional boundaries really seriously and am continually evaluating my ethics and practice decisions to ensure that I'm practicing with integrity and not risking harm to my clients by extending my scope of practice. That's really important, and I want you to know that I don't take my work lightly. So one of the big roles of supervision is to process what happens in session, right? But outside of the session. My dietitian clients often come to me with client cases that threw them off guard, that maybe they don't feel qualified to navigate, whether that's due to imposter syndrome or a genuine lack of experience with a particular case. Or maybe they might come to me with a case that brought up more anxiety or another strong emotion than usual, and we talk it out. This is so rare in dietetics, especially if you're moving into private practice. Maybe you work alone and don't have anyone to talk to about your challenging cases or your extra hard days. Maybe, like some of my clients, you do have a team of dietitians that you work with, but they aren't really all that supportive or empathetic, and it isn't in the organization's culture to discuss these things. Or maybe you're working virtually right now and you don't have the same support that you did when you were working in the office with other people. Another thing that my clients sometimes note is that they practice from a weight inclusive or intuitive eating space, or they want to, but they don't fully know how, but every other dietitian that they work with is weight centric. So they wind up feeling like they can't talk to those dietitians for support. All of these situations can lead to isolation. My biggest goal, the very reason I started my program, is because I don't want a single dietitian out there to feel alone, to feel like they're the only ones going through whatever it is that you're going through. I've been there. I've felt it. I've felt the isolation. And we deserve more than that. My dietitian clients come to me and they don't feel isolated or alone anymore. They get the support that they're missing professionally. They have someone who will listen, who has been counseling for years, and who can offer an objective perspective on whatever situation is troubling them. And if I don't have the answer, because of course, none of us is perfect, we can't know everything, I give you extra resources, or I point you in a direction of someone or something that might help. I'm in your corner. You don't have to process and unpack and struggle alone. Now, another reason why supervision exists is to close the gap between your current knowledge and future professional skills. I know a lot of dietitians feel upset that they feel like our education doesn't fully prepare us for what we really need, the skills that we really need for the field. And I agree. And that's another podcast episode. But we also have to acknowledge that we can't learn everything in school, or else we'd be in school for 20 years. So at some point, we need options to fill the gaps that we don't get in school. And supervision is one of those tools. So let's go back to the dietitian who may want to explore intuitive eating, but they're not 100% sure, or they don't know if they're doing it right, or they kind of like the concepts but don't know how to apply it to their work. I could certainly recommend those dietitians pursue the certified intuitive eating counselor credential. After all, learning intuitive eating directly from the source is ideal, right? Kind of. Maybe. Sometimes. I do recommend the certification for all my RGs who know that they're interested in intuitive eating. But most of my clients, like I said, aren't all that sure. So I help them with the foundation. I help them with the cognitive dissonance, that feeling of conflict that they get when what they're learning in intuitive eating and weight inclusive care is at odds with what they learned in school. And if and when they're ready, they can then deepen their knowledge with that cert. As counselors, we must recognize what we don't know and seek out supervision to close that gap, because we can't always refer out when we aren't experts in something. That might be an option sometimes, right? It's great if we know that we're not an expert in a particular niche and we know another dietitian is, and we can get that client to someone who specializes. But there are going to be lots of situations where we have to work with someone we don't feel ready to. And if we want to make sure that we help that person and don't harm them, we need someone to guide us through. We also have to recognize that if we're beginners at something, like we're new to intuitive eating, the only way that we're going to get better is by doing it. And by doing it, we have to actually start before we're ready. So it's helpful to have that supervisor, that supervision at your side to help guide you through it. Nearly all of my dietitian clients are in the early stages of their professional intuitive eating journey. Many aren't even sure if they fully agree with it, and they're grappling with how to apply the concepts to their work in a way that feels authentic and true to themselves. I'm here for that. I'm here to answer your questions, to help you wrestle with the cognitive dissonance that I just talked about. It happens when you hear about intuitive eating or a haze, and it conflicts with what you've been taught. I help you consider it from all angles and settle not on a way of practicing that I dictate, but a way that feels right to you. I can assure you that my job in supervision, my job in my program, is not to make you carbon copies of me. It's to help you feel more confident asserting who you are as an individual practitioner. So, my client that is currently building a private practice, but she's been grappling with the idea of weight inclusive care and what that really means, and does she practice it, and does she preach it, and does she agree with it? We talk about that a lot in session, and we work through it. Or my client who works part-time in private practice, who doesn't feel all that comfortable navigating the emotional side of food and body image, yet she knows it keeps coming up in her sessions. So we go over techniques, and I help her decompress from those sessions because she doesn't gravitate as naturally to the emotional side of the puzzle. That's okay, right? We don't all have to feel naturally great at this. We don't all have to resonate or specialize or have strengths in the exact same areas of our practice. And then there's also my client who just got her first client and came to me with how to approach that situation from a haze and intuitive eating lens. So we talked about the things to ask and explore in that first session and how to prepare for questions and concerns that may come up early on. One of my other clients recently felt nervous about starting to see clients from an intuitive eating space because she didn't feel like she was fully ready for it. And I reminded her, that's why she has me. No, I can't sit in on the session or hold her hand literally, but I am here. I'm here to help her figure out what to address and how to do it. I'm here when the client throws her a curveball. We not only have our weekly sessions, but we also have between call support. I know that it's scary to start something new, which is why my support is a cornerstone of my program. I help you feel stronger and be stronger in your work as a dietitian. And I know I talk a lot about on counseling on here, or about counseling on here. It's because it's a big part of what I do. But no, not all of my clients are in private practice. If we circle back to the first reason for supervision, that you need and deserve space to process and unpack what you cannot do while you're working, we come to another benefit of supervision that does not focus on counseling. One of the areas that I help dietitians with is something that can affect any of us, no matter where or how we practice: our own relationship with food and body. This issue is twofold. First, we have the relationship that you have coming into your education. And then we have the relationship that you have with food and body once you're in the profession. Let's start with the first one, but first a disclaimer. Talking about food and body image struggles amongst dietitians can feel uncomfortable. I've been warned against it in the past, but uncomfortable conversations are important. So if you notice yourself feeling something strong as I go through some of these things, pause, take a few deep breaths, take a break, come back to the episode if you need to when you're ready. Sit with that discomfort. Okay, so we know from research that nutrition students and dietitians have higher rates of eating disorders and disordered eating compared to the average population. They've done studies on it. I do have some of them in the show notes on my website for you if you're interested in reading up on it. I'm not going to go through them specifically in the episode just for the sake of time, but of course, if you are interested in hearing more about this or having me do a deeper dive into this topic in particular, I'm more than happy to. Now, the Academy has publicly come out on record denying this fact, but I can tell you the research is 100% there. And I get it. Like I said, this isn't comfortable to talk about for sure. Still, it has to be recognized. There are some individuals who actively pursue a career in nutrition, inspired by their own personal experience overcoming a clinical eating disorder. Maybe there was a dietitian in a treatment center or outpatient practice that made a huge difference in their recovery. Or the very fact that they went through the recovery process inspired them to help others. There are also some individuals who may choose the field of nutrition and dietetics because it is a safe and acceptable outlet for their personal focus on food and health. They may not have a clinically diagnosed or even diagnosable eating disorder, but maybe they do experience stress and anxiety surrounding their relationship with food and their body, and studying nutrition helps them feel more in control. There are still others who don't have disordered relationships with food going into school, but the nutrition curriculum itself triggers an eating disorder. I've been pretty open about the fact that I actually fit into this final category. I've always struggled with body dysmorphia. It was undiagnosed, so I really can't say officially that that's what it was, but knowing what I know, there are pretty clear signs of it all through my childhood. Certainly, being in a major that focused so heavily on helping people shrink their bodies in the name of health did not alleviate the concerns and struggles for me. But the food, my relationship with food actually only became disordered in school. Everything I was learning about food and nutrition and health mixed with my perfectionism, and it made me feel like I had to be the perfect dietetics major. There's a lot of pressure, even from a lot of professors, subconsciously, certainly unintentionally, about this. It wound up spiraling for me into what I believe is full-on orthorexia, and it got worse after graduation before I discovered intuitive eating and did the foundational work that I needed to build up my mental, emotional, and physical health, nurture a more compassionate relationship with my body, and rediscover joy and flexibility in food. Nobody caught my eating disorder in school because it was considered healthy eating and healthy living. In a lot of ways, the things that I was doing were flat out encouraged by my professors. And when the gatekeepers of our institution are not only not catching these red flags of students who need and deserve compassionate support, but are actually promoting and teaching messages that fuel further disordered relationships with food and body, we are bringing harm to each other and to the people we serve. So it isn't at all uncommon for dietetic students to graduate with a lot of stress, pressure, and anxiety around eating in their bodies. And then we're expected to turn around and help people become healthier. It's flat out dangerous. I know that I absolutely gave harmful advice when I was a new dietitian because I simply didn't know better. I'm going to tie this back to mental health counseling again because, in a lot of ways, the counseling field is a few steps ahead of dietetics developmentally as a profession. There's a lot that we can learn from them. Not that they're perfect, not that they're doing everything right, but there's a lot of things that we could really incorporate into our field. Now, in professional counseling, current counselors and counselor educators are expected to be gatekeepers. I used that term just a little bit ago. As a student, my mental health and emotional health is essentially monitored, and they will reach out to me if they are concerned. Not to shame me, not to apply a label or stigma, but so that I can get the support I deserve. Because if they don't, if I graduate and I'm struggling with my own mental health, I can't be expected to help others, and in fact, I may be putting others in harm's way. I will hurt myself more, and I risk hurting my patients or clients too. This gatekeeping doesn't exist in our profession. Instead, the academy denies that this is even an issue, and by denying it, we are essentially forcing new dietitians to struggle in silence. Like I said, I had a coach who told me that I shouldn't talk to you, shouldn't talk to other dietitians about food and body image. It becomes this culture of avoidance and secrecy, and it invalidates and isolates all of our colleagues who are struggling and don't have anywhere to turn. If you feel stressed or anxious around food or your body, that does not mean that you're a bad dietitian. There is no shame in needing help. We have to normalize this kind of support because guess what? It's nearly impossible to be a dietitian and not feel conflicts around food and body at some point. Now, not every nutrition student struggles the way that I did, and certainly not every nutrition student or current dietitian has experienced an eating disorder, clinical or otherwise. But nearly every dietitian I know receives plenty of unsolicited comments on their food and body choices, or I should say their bodies and their food choices. We get it from friends, we get it from family members, we get it from coworkers, clients, even strangers. It seems like everyone has an opinion about what we look like and what we are or are not eating. We get comments on our bodies, we get intimate questions about our bodies. Comments if we eat the burger, comments if we eat the salad, right? It's like this lose-lose situation where everything we do or don't do is subject to criticism from someone else. And whether that triggers disordered behaviors in you or not, it's still stressful and it's upsetting. And it can take a lot of strength and self-compassion and fortitude to withstand the constant barrage of commentary without breaking down. We cannot pretend this is not an issue, because as long as we remain in denial, nobody receives the support that they deserve. You deserve someone to help you through this. You deserve a profession that has your well-being in mind. You deserve the validation that you are not broken or wrong or a bad dietitian if you happen to struggle with food or body image. There's no shame or judgment. And you deserve support to find peace and strength. And the people we serve deserve a profession that recognizes the importance of nurturing the holistic well-being of its professionals. So, I have gone against my former coach's advice, at least in this situation. Supervision is an opportunity for you to cultivate a confident, peaceful, and compassionate relationship with food and body for yourself, which is an ongoing process. And it's the first step in helping others find peace and confidence for themselves too. I work with my dietitian clients to explore how past experiences and culture have influenced not only their relationship with food and body, but also their confidence and their perfectionism and their work ethic. And my clients learn to question the stories they tell themselves about what they should be or what they should do or look like or want in life. And they go on to feel more confident in living out life on their terms. We need to normalize this. This is a great opportunity. We don't need to bury our heads in the sand from it. Yes, it's vulnerable, and maybe it's uncomfortable, but guess what? That's what growth is all about. And supervision is, to kind of sum it all up in a single sentence, a way for you to commit to professional growth. It's not therapy, but it is support. It's someone who is on your team, in your corner of the ring, like, go on, throw in all the sports metaphors right here. I'm here for you on hard counseling days. And if you don't counsel, I'm here for you on your hard clinical days or your hard community days or your hard whatever days. When you had to set aside all your own stuff to get the job done, and now you need some space to unpack it all. I'm here for you before holidays, like Thanksgiving, which is coming up in the US this week, when family and friends can make stressful and unsolicited body and food comments, and maybe your anxiety levels are already sky high just thinking about it. I'm here for you when your perfectionism is paralyzing you from progress. In short, I'm here for you. And if that's something that has been missing for you in this profession, the support, the guidance, the safe space to be vulnerable and honest and not be judged for it, then I'm here for you. And I'd love to work with you. Now, I've got a big announcement on the podcast next week about my supervision program. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, if you're ready to snag one of my one-on-one supervision spots that will be opening very, very soon, or maybe you're still unsure about what this supervision thing is all about and just want to chat with me more about how I can support you as a dietitian, head to my website, www.empoweringdietitians.com/application. It's empoweringdietitians.com/application. And fill out a quick form to request a free discovery call with me. Remember, you don't have to struggle alone. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Empowering Dietitians podcast. If you resonated with what you heard on today's episode and enjoy the podcast overall, I would love it if you could rate the podcast and leave a review. Your feedback helps this podcast reach more dietitians who need to hear these messages. And apparently in the podcast world, ratings and reviews are actually really important. And then, if you are looking for more one-on-one support in your journey as a dietitian, I want to invite you to apply to my Empowering Dietitians one-on-one supervision program, where I guide dietitians just like you to reconnect with your purpose and passion, overcome stress, anxiety, and perfectionism, and confidently start standing up for yourself and your beliefs, all so that you can truly make a bigger difference in your clients' lives and design your dream life as a dietitian. To learn more, head to www.empoweringdietitians.com/supervision.